Hi, I'm Joy Manning, editor of Edible Philly.
And I'm Marisa McClellan, author of Food in Jars.
Welcome to Local Mouthful. We're here to talk shop with obsessed home cooks everywhere. This week, we're talking about frika pilaf with lamb from the Palestinian Table Cookbook, homemade salsa, and Labor Day Eats. But first, let's compare notes on something we read this week. Marisa, you found this one.
I did.
What's it all about?
So as we move, you know, as a planet, the population is growing. And one of the issues that come up are, do we have enough food to feed a growing planet? And so this was an article about how the forgotten crops are the future of food and how, you know, we cultivate a fairly tiny fraction of what's available in sort of the food world, and how what we really need to do is to be thinking about the larger kind of spectrum of available foods to feed a growing planet.
Yeah, I was really struck by the fact that, you know, the article said, which is something that, of course, I know that it's mainly four crops that provide most of the world's food supply, and they're wheat, maize, which is corn, rice, and soybeans. Like, I mean, most of us know that.
Yeah.
But in reality, there are 7,000 crops, according to this article, that have been farmed on the planet for thousands of years, and we just don't pay attention to those.
Yeah, I liked the quote that there's no food insecurity in the world. There's food ignorance.
Yeah. And the organization that this piece profiles is called Crops for the Future, which is, I think, kind of funny, since really what they're focusing on is crops of the past.
Yeah.
But they seem to be doing tons of interesting work with, like, many ingredients that I have never heard of and cannot pronounce.
Yeah.
They're based in Malaysia.
Yeah. And it's just interesting to see, like, it never occurs to me that there's so much. Of course there is.
Right.
And we get sort of into these patterns as a culture, as people, where it's like, we want to do what we know and what's comfortable. And also, as, you know, farms became more industrialized, you needed to sort of make things consistent so that you could use the same machinery. And so it makes sense that we have fallen into this trap.
Well, the article also points out the marketability of unfamiliar ingredients is a major stumbling block. You know, people are very, very likely to just want to eat what they already know, and they don't want to try. And people, as generally speaking, people are not so into trying and experimenting with their diets. But they did also draw attention to the success story that is quinoa. You know, 30 years ago, according to this article, quinoa was not really eaten outside of the Andes Mountains where it was grown. And today it's a very popular food. I mean, not as popular as those four.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's definitely broken through that hurdle of people not being willing to try it. And maybe we'll see more of that. Maybe people are more open-minded than is thought. And certainly, as another reason that these foods are being explored is because of the impact on the planet of the intensive farming of these four crops. It's really a contributing factor to global warming. And these, like a big diversity of the type of these ancient forgotten foods could help reduce carbon emissions and, you know, increase food security. Because obviously if, like, there's some kind of like plague on wheat, I mean, or corn, everybody is in trouble.
Absolutely. Yeah, so, I mean, it's like it's the banana problem that we have, you know.
Explain the banana problem.
Well, the banana problem is that all the bananas we eat are sort of genetically identical. And so when, like, there have been funguses and different thing, bacteria that have targeted that genetically identical banana, and there could be a point where we don't have any more bananas.
I think we're on our second banana.
Yeah, we're on our second banana.
The banana we eat now is called Cavendish, I believe.
Yeah.
But there was a previous banana that was like the banana, and then it was wiped out.
Yeah.
And I have read that there's no like,
there's no third
there's
banana.
There's no like understudy banana in the wings here, you know, that is like, that would meet our expectations of what a banana is. So, yeah, diversity, crop diversity is important from all kinds of standpoints. And it did say in the article that we're going to have to do this, like, because of global warming and, you know, economic issues, this is going to have to occur whether we like it or not. And before we move on, I will say one other thing I loved about this article was it pointed out that it's always been women that have saved the seeds,
yes,
protected the tradition, kept the traditional foods growing. And it is because of female farmers and home gardeners that we even still have these foods.
Yeah.
So, so anyway, we'll put a link in our show notes. I think it's pretty interesting. Why don't you read it and tell us what you think and, you know, maybe try some kind of new food this week.
Yeah. Hey Joy, what's for dinner?
So let me just make a long story long. on the weekends, I really like to watch some kind of food TV in the morning.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I don't like Chopped or like competitions. I like the traditional dump and stir cooking shows that I think of from back in the early days of the Food Network. And
yeah,
we're like on a rotation. You know, I blew through all the Mary Berry series from BBC. And we love Cooks Illustrated, or I guess the TV show version is called America's Test Kitchen, mm-hmm. and its sister show, Cooks County.
Yeah.
And, it's Cooks Country. And then, of course, now we have Milk Street. Mm-hmm. These are basically my shows that I watch. I love the Barefoot Contessa, but we don't watch that in the morning because Dan thinks Ina mumbles too much and it gets on his nerves. Anyway, so sometimes we run out. So before I get into what I'm telling you about what's for dinner, if you guys have any shows like this that I perhaps don't know about, please share them with me because like I'm getting a little desperate. Such that this past weekend, we were just watching like little short videos on YouTube, like all kinds of like Milk Street, I guess, has these little short, like 1 or 2 minute videos that didn't make the episodes. Uh-huh. And we were basically watching them just like one after another. And all of a sudden up pops Reem Cassis, who is, you know, a Philadelphia based cookbook author and someone that we've had on the podcast and like a lovely woman on
episode 226 if you want to go back.
Terrific food writer, episode 226, and author of The Palestinian Table. So she is I'm having trouble remembering what her little segment was even about on Milk Street, but it just sort of reminded me of her in the book, and I was like, let's do something from that cookbook tonight, because I was just really inspired by her brief appearance. And so I said to Dan, while I was going off to a spinning class, and I was like, we can make anything from this book that you want, which is much more permissive than I usually am about what is cooked in the house. You know, I'm usually trying to like have a real saturated fat-free lifestyle going on here. But at the same time, I don't want to be a completely rigid killjoy that doesn't enjoy my cookbooks. So Dan picked lamb and frika pilaf.
Sounds good.
So I have to say, from a health perspective, it wasn't really that bad. Frika is obviously it's not obvious to everyone. Let me tell you what frika is.
Yeah.
It is like a cracked wheat that is smoked. I mean, it has like a real, I think actually they burn it in the fields to make it as part of the harvesting process. Yeah. And it just has, for that reason, has a smoky, wonderful flavor. Do you keep it around?
I don't, but I've certainly cooked it before and it's really great.
I love it. It's so good. I had to buy it. I was out. It was obviously something I made quite a few times in the process of working on the Zahav cookbook many years ago. There's a tremendously delicious recipe in that book for chicken frika where it's cooked risotto style. But it's really good. I mean, side note, some of the recipes in the Zahav cookbook taste more like they do at Zahav than others because of the limitations of a home kitchen.
Yeah.
But the chicken frika is a dead ringer for what you get in the restaurant.
Hmm.
Anyway, back to Reem's book. So here she cooks the frika pilaf style, which is one of my favorite styles to cook grains.
Yeah.
It is a combination of butter and olive oil that the grains are toasted in with onion. And then you add the frika, her 9-spice mix, which is like the secret sauce in all of her recipes.
Yeah.
And then broth. So that's another, it can be a stumbling block to cooking from this book because she wants you to get these 9 spices, roast them in a pan, and then grind them fresh, which I had previously been slightly resistant to doing. But I was real motivated and I got all the spices together except for the mace blades, which I couldn't find. So I did in the end substitute like a pinch of dried mace. But so let me just tell you what the 9 spices are. you need 6 allspice berries, 6 cinnamon sticks, 3 tablespoons coriander seeds, 1 tablespoon black peppercorn, 1 teaspoon cardamom seeds, 1/2 teaspoon cumin seeds, 10 cloves, 2 blades of mace, and 1/2 of a whole nutmeg crushed. And then you roast them in a skillet, in a dry skillet. And I'll tell you further, I was so determined to do this that the first time I roasted the spices, they burned.
Oh, no.
My stove seemed to like spontaneously like leap up in temperature.
Huh.
I don't know. I don't know what happened there. Dan insists it was user error, but at any rate, so I just calmly discarded the burnt spices and started over.
There you go.
But it was well worth it. It was this. I made you smell it before we started recording. It was so delicious and complex. It's sweet. It's savory. It's spicy. It's warm. It's really good. So this spice mixture both goes into the pilaf, the frika pilaf, and you use it to season the meat.
Okay.
So while this is like a mouth-watering situation. While the pilaf is cooking, you fry pine nuts.
Okay.
Now, typically, I would toast pine nuts. And I said to Dan, why don't we just toast these pine nuts? And he's like, we're following this recipe. Let's just do it the way Reem says. It's like, okay. So we fried the pine nuts. Good call. It's a very delicious way to eat pine nuts. And then you fry up the seasoned meat until it's done. And then you plate the pilaf in a serving platter, top it with the pine nuts and the lamb, and dig in.
So good.
It was so good. I really loved it. And I know that I don't eat red meat much anymore, so that might play a role here. When we were eating it, I said to Dan, oh my God, meat is so tasty. But it was just stupendously delicious. And there was plenty. It makes a lot. So the next day, you know, Dan took some to work with the lamb, and I was like, I want to have this for lunch, but I don't want to eat even more red meat. So yeah. I had gotten my first delicata squash of the season, which, you know, is one of my favorite signs of fall.
Yeah.
And so I decided I was going to roast some delicata squash in the 9 spice mix with olive oil and put that on top of the frika pilaf. And that was equally delicious. And now I want to have like people over for dinner where I make this. I put it into 2 serving platters. One is topped with 9 spice lamb. One is topped with 9 spice roasted vegetables. And it'll be, you know, a good vegetarian, meatitarian kind of
That sounds like situation. A good dinner party.
Yeah. And I mean, there's tons of other stuff that I would like to make from this book. So maybe that's going to, I don't know, become a thing for me.
I like it.
So anyway, now I know we've already sung the praises of this book, but I just wanted to give you my field notes.
It sounds so good. So
let's talk about something you're making.
Yeah. So it's tomato season. And, as you guys know, I do a lot of canning. That might be an understatement. By the time the tomato season is done this year, I will have worked my way through about 150 pounds of tomatoes.
Staggering.
And because I really do like to try to can tomatoes enough to get through the year. And so one of the things that I make a lot when I have, you know, mountains of tomatoes around that I'm canning is I make salsa, both fresh salsa that I can eat immediately and salsa that I can can. And there's not a whole lot of difference between the two other than obviously the one you can, you cook. And so my favorite way to can a salsa is to make a blender salsa where I roast the tomatoes to loosen the skins. And then I combine that with onions and some canned, green chilies and then jalapeno, cilantro, lime juice and salt and sort of zap it in the blender so that it doesn't get completely pureed, but is kind of smooth. Think about like a, you know, like a restaurant style kind of pureed salsa. And then I cook it down a little bit and I can it. It's fabulous. Like it's so good. I could eat it, you know, from the pot with a spoon, like it's soup. But when I want to do a fresh batch, it's really the same ingredients. I'm only, you know, instead of blistering the tomatoes to peel them, I'll leave the skins on. And I just do tomatoes and onions and cilantro and peppers and salt and lime juice and go to town. And it's one of those things that'll keep in the refrigerator for like 3 or 4 days, gets better and better. And it's such a treat to have the fresh salsa.
I'm listening very closely to this because as I just mentioned before we started recording, I have kind of a glut of tomatoes on hand. And also I had like a real stressful day yesterday.
Yeah.
And, now that I don't drink alcohol anymore, You know that feeling where you have like a real stressful day and you just like need something?
Yeah.
So I was walking home from the subway and I went to the farmer's market and I did something I never do, which is I purchased a large bag of tortilla chips and a small container of guacamole. And then I stood at my island in my kitchen just like binge eating guacamole and chips until the guacamole was gone and I felt somewhat better.
Well.
So yeah. I have remaining chips and all those tomatoes. So I'm going to definitely give that a try.
You should. And you know, another fun thing to do with a fresh homemade salsa like this is add some chopped cucumbers. You can almost make it into kind of half salsa, half gazpacho and then turn it into dinner.
Yeah, of course. That sounds great.
Yeah.
Now I know that even though tomatoes obviously have a special place in your heart. And when we think of salsa, we think of tomatoes, but you make salsa out of other summer ingredients, right?
I do,
right?
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that?
I love to do it with peaches. So, you know.
I have an excess of those too. Yeah. Go on.
So, I mean, it's really the same thing. I mean, the basic ingredients for any salsa, is, you know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, are onion, some like a chili pepper of some kind to make it hot, lime juice to make it bright and tangy, salt to kind of pull out all the liquid and the flavor, and then cilantro if you like it.
Couple questions.
Yeah.
With peaches in a peach salsa, obviously if you want to eat a peach as a snack, you want to have like a nice, soft, juicy, ripe peach. For a salsa, can you use a less ripe peach or do you think they still need to be ripe?
I like to have them be a little bit, to definitely be ripe because one, you're going to want to peel that peach if you're making salsa out of it because the skins really get in the way of the pleasure. If you're going to do it, you could do a plum or a nectarine salsa where you wouldn't peel it. But with a peach, it needs to be peeled. And peaches really give up their skins more readily when they're a little bit riper. And also you're going to get that juice. And to me, you want salsa to have that kind of juice at the bottom that you can then kind of slurp up when all the solids are gone.
Do you mix peach and tomato in a salsa?
You could. That'd be really delicious.
What about dried chilies? Are they a reasonable substitute for fresh?
Yeah, but you'd want to rehydrate them. So like plump them in some warm water for half an hour or so before you chop them up and add them.
Gotcha. I mean, I'm obviously going to make salsa today. That's like,
yeah,
has to be done to dispatch the chips and all those tomatoes.
Well, and I will say too that having dried chilies are good, but those little cans, like those 4 or 7 ounce cans.
I have those also.
Roasted green chilies. They are such a good salsa addition. I know that a lot of people think, well, but so fresh. Why are you adding a canned ingredient? But they're so flavorful. They bring the right amount of spice.
Those are a key ingredient in one of my favorite recipes from Thug Kitchen, those baked flautas.
So oh, really?
I keep them around for that reason.
They're one of my favorite things to have around too.
What about other? I know that you make at least one other type of summer salsa because I've seen it on your Instagram.
So I also do a corn salsa every year. And I've done something like 14 pints of salsa, both just straight tomato and corn salsa. The corn salsa.
Excuse me, 14 pints?
Yeah, and I'm not done. I'm not done with salsa.
Wait, please pardon my slowness with the math, but a pint has 2 cups in it, right? So you've made 28 cups of salsa?
Yeah.
That's a serious amount of salsa
making. I like to budget for about a pint a week. Throughout the year.
Okay.
So, I mean, maybe not quite that, but I'd like to be at like 35 jars of salsa before all is said and done.
Okay, go on.
Roasted corn salsa. So I blister the corn cobs, like the kernels on the cob under my broiler. And then I do the same with the tomatoes. I cut the Roma tomatoes in half. I blister them to loosen the skins. And then I roast some poblano peppers. And you combine that, you cut the corn off the cobs.
That's what I saw you doing on Instagram. Yep. Go on.
You peel the tomatoes, you chop them up. You peel the peppers, you chop them up. You add some onion, vinegar, lime juice, salt. And then you cook it for a couple minutes and put it in jars and can it. And it is the biggest treat come winter when things are dark, flavor, you know, like there's just as much, not as much kind of vivid flavor available in winter. And I love it. I, you know, will often do like salads with like, you know, some like big fajita salads. So, peppers and maybe some chicken over lots of chopped greens and then a dollop of this corn salsa and a little bit of sour cream. And that's dinner.
It sounds
so
great. Good.
It's a great thing to add to chili. it's a really delicious one.
I really appreciate this quick salsa primer, but I'm sure there's lots more at Food in Jars, right?
Always.
Not to mention your books. So if this was like not quite enough to get you making salsa, if you need a little more hand-holding and instructions, foodinjars.com, Marisa, has you covered. I might be visiting there later today as I try to get rid of my tomatoes and my chips. So this weekend...
Yes.
The last holiday weekend of summer.
Oh my gosh.
Labor Day weekend.
Crazy. I can't believe we're here already.
What are your plans?
So I've been feeling sort of vacation deprived this summer. I haven't really gone away and we're still not going
away. Did you go to Ireland?
In April.
Okay.
I haven't
Time
done any,
flies.
Yeah, I know. I haven't really done any like summer vacation things. And so Scott and I decided that we're still not going away, but we are having a staycation. So he's taking Friday off. We're going to do some touristy things around Philadelphia. I think we're going to go to the top of Liberty Place. They have that view observation.
That's fun.
Deck.
I've been there. Yeah. Actually, I went there for my birthday a couple of years ago and I saw them filling your pool that day. Do you remember?
Yes.
You can definitely see the top of your apartment building from there.
Yeah. We're going to have some time at the pool. We're probably going to go out to eat at least once. And my cousins are coming over. And so they're on Labor Day. They're coming over to go swimming and come over for dinner. And so I'm going to make a big Instant Pot full of salsa braised chicken thighs that'll then turn into chicken tacos.
Your homemade salsa.
My homemade salsa, chicken thigh, boneless, skinless chicken thighs. And then serve it with make a trek down here to get, really good tortillas and, cheese toppings. I'll have a big salad and
that'll be
dinner.
Restaurant wise, what do you have your eye on?
Well, I still haven't made it to the Seattle Teriyaki, which is not a fancy place, but I think that that's one spot that we'll stop at. And then I don't know. I'm not sure yet. We'll just be kind of guided by the whims of where we are.
I also have some staycation thoughts.
Yeah.
I want to go to the planetarium at the Franklin Institute.
Oh, that's so fun. I haven't done that in years.
I've never done it.
Really?
Yes. And I think there's some kind of like video game exhibit there that Dan wants to see.
Hey, that's fun.
So that would be fun for us. On the restaurant front, I really want to go to Spice Finch, which is up in your hood. Have you heard anything about this?
I haven't heard anything about it.
Are you familiar with Jen Carroll? And in case listeners are not familiar, Jen Carroll was the feisty lady chef testant on Top Chef, and I think she came back for like fan favorites because she was like so lovable, and she made it pretty far in the competition though. Someone else won her year. She's best known for working at Le Bernardin, which is Eric Rappaire's fine dining seafood restaurant in New York, and now she's opened her own spot here in Philly, Spice Finch. It's Mediterranean, vegetable forward, interesting non-alcoholic drinks, including a non-alcoholic take on the Negroni.
Hey, that's fun.
So I'm pretty excited to try it out. It's in your hood. I can't remember exactly where.
Huh. I'll have to look.
But I want to try to sneak in there. Sometimes for summer holiday weekends, we make burgers.
Yeah.
Inside, of course, we don't grill the cast iron skillet. Sometimes I like to make potato salad.
Always delicious.
To feel American. I could definitely see us going out for ice cream.
I think you should.
I actually have sort of a new ice cream obsession.
What is it?
Matcha ice cream. It's funny. Dan has like a secret lunchtime life that I don't always know that much about. A couple weeks ago, we went to Chinatown. We went to Tom's, which is a dim sum place that were recently.
Yeah.
And we had sort of a similar like veggie focused.
Yeah.
Light on the light side dinner at Tom's. And then Dan was like, do you want to go to a dessert place? Well, we ended up going to three dessert places in Chinatown that he knows about because it's close to his work and Dan loves dessert. And two of them had green tea ice cream and it was so good.
That sounds delicious.
And then there's this place on East Passyunk where I live called Arctic Scoop and they have green tea ice cream.
Really?
Matcha ice cream. So there's been
that's fun.
Probably a little bit more ice cream than is strictly advisable in the last couple of weeks.
I haven't gotten much ice cream this summer in large part because there used to be a Philly Flavors in my neighborhood, like on my block, and it closed.
Huh.
And so there's Capogiro, but it's sort of expensive and you don't get a lot.
I kind of like that about it. It's like a disincentive. I don't know. Anyway.
But so I don't go there very often. I probably haven't been there in 6 months. And so I don't get ice. I kind of miss it, but at the same time, I'm grateful.
Right. Yeah, I'm on this green tea matcha ice cream thing. One place had like a, it was all soft serve and they had like mochi balls.
Ooh, that sounds so good.
Dan should lead like Chinatown dessert tours or something.
He should.
Oh, I think this all started when I got the matcha latte with you.
Oh, yeah. At
during the podcast festival. Mm-hmm. And what, I can't remember the name of that coffee spot.
Old City Coffee.
Old City Coffee. They had the most incredible oat milk matcha latte that I drank in about 90 seconds. Anyway.
Oh, it sounds good. So I think it'll be a fun Labor Day.
Yeah. If you're going away, have fun. If you're staying home, have fun. Might be a good time to binge listen to all of our podcast episodes. If you're cooking, have fun. If you're going out, have fun. Anyway.
Yeah. So, Joy, what are you loving lately?
I just signed up for Philly Foodworks.
Which is an awesome program.
Have you ever ordered from them?
So, like 3 years ago, I did a partnership with them where once a month they sent me a free box. Mm-hmm. And then I featured recipes on my site that were ways to preserve and use up what they'd sent me.
Philly Foodworks is kind of like a convenience focused CSA.
Yeah.
Does that, it's, you never, you can choose to get the traditional box of like whatever is grown that week, or you can pick and you can get your items a la carte and at your request. They have both. They have all kinds of things. They have produce. They have pantry items. They have oils and vinegars and dried beans. They have prepared food. So since Fair Food Farm Stand closed down, there has been a push from them to, you know, sign up for Philly Foodworks because you can get some of the same stuff there.
Yeah.
And I got my first order yesterday or 2 days ago, and it was great. I mean, it's a really convenient spot. They have a lot of stuff. The produce was really beautiful and delicious, and I think I'm on board now.
Yeah,
so I really just like wanted it. To mention that in case anyone else was thinking about joining. They have local wild mushrooms. That's where all my tomatoes came from. Beautiful oils. Yeah. So.
Yeah, and I also like that it's both a combination of produce, and then you can also bread. When I was doing it a couple times, I got bagels, which were great. Mm-hmm. It was the Metropolitan, like, multi-grain bagel, which was delicious. It's a really good way to conveniently do your grocery shopping and support local producers.
Yeah, especially for, for us, it really works. I think it can really fill a little bit of a Whole Foods sized hole in my shopping life. So, yeah, I got a summer fruit bundle with blackberries, raspberries, and peaches.
That's nice.
Beautiful lettuce, potatoes. So, yeah, I'm excited. I'm going to do it again next week. And
that's awesome.
Do they go through the winter? Do you know?
Yeah, it's all year round.
Huh. Oh, we got milk, staples. It's like, it just seems really convenient.
And did they deliver it to your house or do you have to pick up?
I think they might have delivered it to my house if I want it, but the pickup is like so close. It's just on the same block that I live on, one block over. So I just.
That's easy.
Yeah, it was really easy.
Yeah, I mean, if you're in the Philly area and you're curious, it's definitely worth trying it. Mm-hmm. I liked it when I did it.
I think I'm going to take this job from you this week because you've been doing it every week.
Okay, go for it.
If you know someone who might like to listen to this show, someone that you talk to about home cooking or grocery shopping or recipes, maybe you've already told them about the show or maybe you will. But that isn't always enough. You'd be surprised how many people out there don't already listen to podcasts and don't really know how. So be a friend, grab their phone and just do it for them.
Yep.
Not only will you be helping us by connecting a potential new listener with Local Mouthful, you'll be helping them. Introducing them to this show and also the wide, wonderful world of podcasting, which I know a lot of you know is a great quality of life upgrade over the radio.
That's true.
So, Maurice has been making this pitch every week and I thought I'd do it on her behalf.
You did it beautifully. And I think that's it for this week's episode of Local Mouthful. Our thanks go out to Dan Call for editing the show, to Saul Rosenbaum for designing our logo, and to Raina Rose for providing the music. And thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, make sure to subscribe via iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Local Mouthful. Sign up for our newsletter, catch up on past episodes, and check out our show notes at localmouthful.com. Until next time, happy eating.